about nonprofits. But that doesn't mean we can't be brutally truthful. I'm Dennis Lube, supposedly your host, but really just stuck here when Jeff left, along with Matt Dillahunty.
Hello.
Who's really the brains behind this whole operation. Thad Engling.
Hello.
Who just can't stay away. And Schilling.
Yeah.
Who's just creepy. We're coming to just a few of you live, since most of you will be listening to this via podcast. From the Dillahunty International Studios in Austin, Texas, which is to say a small apartment complex that treats faux architectural styles like a goulash. What we are is a bunch of guys sitting around a folding card table facing microphones with no preparation, hoping the power strip at our feet doesn't pull a Hiroshima until we're finished. It's the 15th of November, 2008, and it's wise to remember that the new president-elect won't take office for another month and a half. Oh yeah, the music was Little Wing by Concrete Blonde, and one would hope fair use. This show is sponsored, whatever that means, by the atheist community of Austin. It's like the nonprofits, except it's a bigger group of atheists and has girls in it. It's also supposed to be a nonprofit educational organization for the promotion of positive atheism and the separation of church and state, and I assume it does that. I'm also required to mention that you can learn more about the ACA by contacting the voicemail at 512-371-2911 or visiting the website at www.atheist-community.org. I guess this little shout-out is what they mean by sponsored. I've never been, but they tell me the ACA hosts a happy hour at the Dog and Duck on Thursday nights at 7. I have no idea what that entails, but I suspect it's a local announcement, and listeners from Zimbabwe won't be attending. So the nonprofits broadcasts live every other Saturday from 2 to 3:30 Central Time, except when it's inconvenient to too many people at the same time, or we start late. We do have lives, you know. And you can supposedly participate in the show by logging into the chat room by following the directions at www.nonprofitsradio.com. Something else I've never done, but I think we've all noticed just how effective that is. So relax or continue working or whatever you do when you listen to the nonprofits and discover that what will drop out of our mouths next. Believe me, we're just as anxious to find out as you are.
That was fucking awesome. I had to mute my microphone. I was over here laughing my ass off.
That was the brutal truth intro.
That is the best intro I think you've ever done.
And what's funny is, for those of you who know, I have a parrot who has finally come home. And evidently Max will sing. He doesn't really talk a whole lot yet. He'll say hello and a couple things that are unintelligible. But he'll sing to things that are musical. And evidently the soothing tones of Dennis's voice stirred him because he was chattering during that entire introduction.
Well, I love his chattering. It sounds like he's kind of muttering to himself and running through conversations he's going to have.
He is.
It's great.
Yeah, I'm wondering what the hell, I mean, you know, between, well, I don't know. I got to be careful what goes on in here because, it, you know, I could see somebody coming in.
Biological tape recorder.
Yeah, he is. So, yeah, he's going to pick up bits and pieces of nonprofits and probably some porn. And who knows?
Well, if he starts saying, oh, God, oh, God.
Yeah. I'll just teach him to say, no, God, no, God.
Or you can go the Hicks bit. Oh, random chemical chance. Oh, random chemical chance.
So, Russell, our patriot comrade in arms, is absent today.
Yep.
He's actually doing the right thing and spending more time with his son, which is cool.
Cool. All right.
So, we're going to make do without. And Thad, who's vanished for a month or so now, or some change, has decided just by happenstance to show up on this week. So it's not like Russell and Thad are the same person, since you never see them in the same place. But
and just by chance, they show us that we do have lives.
Yes.
Well, yeah. You guys do.
Well, I don't. I'm the one who's here every week, even when, you know. Anyway.
If the show goes on, you're there.
Yeah. If I'm not here, there ain't no show.
There ain't no show.
Which reminds me, looking at the schedule for the whoops, that wasn't very
maybe
nice.
We're not looking at
the schedule for the rest of the year, just so people know in advance, there will be a nonprofit show on November 29th. That's the Saturday after Thanksgiving. On the off chance that something comes up, obviously, you know, all schedules are subject to change. But then there will be a nonprofit show on December 13th. And that will be the final nonprofit show of 2008.
Ah.
And the reason for that is that the next one scheduled would be on the 27th, when I suspect right. other people are going to be busy with things. Yes, I understand the irony that a Christian holiday, yes. which is a conversion of a pagan holiday, is going to interfere with whether or not atheists get their podcast. But some of us have family who are believers and
That's
will be
right.
spending time.
We are atheists, but we do have to deal with theists.
So the question was, when are we going to be back? And originally, last week, actually, or last episode, after mm-hmm. it was over, Dennis and Chillingen and I and Russell talked, and we'd agreed that we'd come back on January 3rd, so there'd just be a three-week gap. However, that creates a big problem.
Oh, yeah?
And that is that one of the things that we've done with the TV show is adjusted the schedule mm-hmm. so that I do 3 weeks, and then I have a weekend off while Russell does a show with Jen.
Oh, okay.
And we tried to coordinate that week off so that it's not a nonprofits week, so that I have one entire weekend that's was initially planned to be just for me. And actually, it's going to turn out to be a day when I get to do ACA work, like setting up the product's website and things like that. But anyway, so instead of coming back on January 3rd, we are coming back on January 10th, which means, yes, there will be an entire four-week period where you will not have nonprofits. Sorry.
Blame the Christians for putting in Christmas on the 25th.
Yeah. It's their fault. If they don't want to move their silly holiday, then it's going to, you know, affect things.
That's right.
However, there is the possibility, if I get time, and I'm reluctant to even mention this because I talked about doing something similar last year and didn't, there are at least two people that I want to have on the nonprofits at some time to do interviews. And what I may do is do the interview just some night with just me and that person using the phone, save it as a podcast, and upload it during the weeks that we're missing.
Cool.
But I won't say who, and I won't say for sure. And, you know, you take what you can get. You get what you pay for.
Well, I'll keep our fingers crossed.
But if he doesn't, lay into him like all hell.
Thanks, bud. Yes. So, nothing much happened in the last couple weeks.
No. Not here.
I mean, you know.
There's a sizable bolus of news here, but...
Well, I mean, granted, we talked about some stuff on,
yeah.
you know, nonprofits, or on Atheist Experience last week.
Any announcements?
We have a new president-elect, but you mentioned that.
Oh, yeah.
And, last week I covered most of the election stuff on the Atheist Experience. With mm-hmm. It was evidently, me taking a week off from the show really stirs me up. So I had to take the second off for work. Martin filled in. And so on the 9th, I think it was, or whatever, I came back, and it was like this rant-filled episode.
Oh, cool.
Couldn't have been the 9th. It was the day of the lecture, which is the first Sunday. So it would have to be before the 7th.
Well, whatever it was.
That's
it's still
good.
Irrelevant.
You do quality grants, man.
But
so
it was the 10th. It was the 10th.
It was the lecture Sunday. It was the first Sunday in November.
Which was... The lecture Sunday was the 2nd. That's when I took off.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
The 9th is the Sunday, last Sunday.
So who are you going to be on with... right after the show with Russell and Jen.
Because
given the week off makes you extra granty. See who's going to...
I think it's Tracy. No, Tracy's this week. I'm not sure. Anyway, it doesn't matter, and we're getting nowhere fast. But I ranted about... I ranted a little bit about Prop 8, not much. Mostly I ranted about the Arkansas decision that fucks over kids.
That one is much more significant, I think, than Prop 8.
It was... I was furious that people could be so callous and let their fear and bigotry drive them to just screw over kids.
What pisses me off more, though...
We know you'd like to have a home, but unless you can have the kind of home that I think you should have, you're pretty much screwed. It just drives me nuts.
What pisses me off most is the adoption organizations have been remaining silent about the issue.
Yeah.
They should be up in arms. They should be furious, and they're not.
Yeah.
Primarily because a lot of them are religiously motivated. They're not focused on the children as much as they are their personal dogma.
Proselytizing.
But for those who don't know, Arkansas passed was it an amendment to their state constitution, or was it just...
I don't know if it was a constitutional amendment. I think it was just legislation. I'm not positive.
Well, they passed a ban on any unmarried couples adopting.
Or single people adopt. If you're not married, you can't adopt. And this was obviously done to prevent, you know, homosexuals from adopting.
Right.
But in the process, they screwed over unmarried heterosexuals, single people. And there are plenty of people in all of those categories that could make for good homes for kids and want to. And they screwed over kids. So, yeah, I ranted about that. And then towards the end, there was a call or two from John and Johnny that prompted some discussion and rants afterwards. But I don't want to relive the whole atheist experience from last week.
On the nonprofits.
I will say that it was evidently there were some people who were cutting out clips of the show and preparing to put them on YouTube almost before we had finished broadcasting the show. So
good.
Evidently, if I take a week off, I get a little ranty.
You get YouTube worthy.
But it was fun and I enjoyed it. Somebody wrote to suggest that I be careful because it may not be the best way to represent us and I should monitor my blood pressure. I didn't get angry. No, I guarantee you there's not a single person who's ever seen me get angry on any episode of The Atheist Experience or Nonprofits. When I get angry, which is, it almost never happens anymore, you'd fucking know. There's going to be stuff broken. And so I don't do it anymore. Do I get frustrated and impassioned and, you know, everything else? Yes. But I don't really get angry. And I was mostly disappointed because John, the caller, and if you go listen to it, sorry to keep talking about Atheist Experience, but if you go listen to it, I was really optimistic that John and I would be able to get somewhere, anywhere. And his religious beliefs continually prevented him from answering simple questions honestly.
Right.
He had to hem and haw and dance around. And so anyway. So what else has been going on over the last couple weeks?
Oh, gosh. Not much. Did we cut into news to find out?
Oh, let's cut into news.
Do you want the good news or the bad news?
Is there good news?
Oh, well, there's amusing news.
Well, there's the new bus campaign in Washington.
Yeah.
There is, which evidently Fox News has been poking lots of fun at.
Yeah, are we getting... I seem to be getting that. I don't have a story on that because I kept getting it mixed up with the one in Britain, you know.
Right.
Yeah.
The one in Washington, I believe the bus ad says, "Why believe in God? Be good for goodness sake."
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Hey, you know.
You know what? One of
gotta start somewhere.
You know what? One
may
of the
not be the
first,
catchiest tune, but
one of the first comments I saw. I mean, several people sent me the story, and I was, you know, encouraged about the campaign and everything else. One of the first comments I saw from a Christian, and I'll go ahead and say that I'm pretty sure I saw this over at Ray Comfort's blog. So, obviously, we're scraping the bottom of the barrel. But it was something along the lines of, oh, they complained about Christians and with regard to charity, and yet they go and waste $40,000 that they could have given to the poor by putting out a bus campaign. Wow. Hey, let me explain something to you. Just because I go buy myself a cheeseburger doesn't mean I also didn't happen to give a dollar to the guy on the corner.
Right.
Just because they spent $40,000 on a bus campaign, they are participating, actually, in the same type of community outreach that the ACA does, that your church probably does, in letting people know, you know what, you're not alone. There are others out there, and there are others out there who are willing to say this, and let's build a productive community. And I applaud them for the bus campaign.
And was it somebody also pointed out, you know, gee, who lives in a huge palatial mansion?
Yes.
You know, you want to talk about money better spent?
Yeah.
The whole Vatican should be reduced to a hovel.
I did like the reaction to the story from whatever corporation or whoever the hell owns the buses and approved the ad. Mm-hmm. They asked them about it, and they said, well, it's not obscene, it's not vulgar, it's fine. We don't...
Yeah.
And they took a very good position
stand
of...
Stand up for their policy.
It's none of our fucking business what you're advertising. It's only our business how you advertise it.
Yep.
And I thought that was a fairly respectable approach because a lot of times when similar things happen, like when atheists buy billboards, the company will try to separate themselves as much as they can and distance themselves from the organization and from the message and all of that.
Yeah.
And this company knew
which,
they didn't have
which
to
from
do
now
that.
On will be known as pulling a Kay Hagan.
Yeah, but you know, the Christians don't want anyone to think that they're good.
Some, yeah, there are some, and actually there's Tracy's probably going to mention this a little bit.
Uh-huh.
I'm pretty sure that Jen will talk about this on next week's Atheist Experience.
Mm-hmm.
There's a woman who has stirred up some controversy because she has been raising her four-year-old to believe that she is a worthless, groveling sinner in need of God. And she goes into detail describing, you know, what she's done and what her daughter has learned from this. And it's... people are flat out saying, no, we're sorry. This is child abuse. You are a despicable human being.
Yes.
And
good God.
That's the kind of thing that I would view as child abuse that we should allow. Just follow with me.
I'm with you. Go ahead. Okay. I wasn't going to stop you.
I'm
just going to correct you in a minute.
Oh.
There are some things that we can find to be child abuse, particularly intellectual child abuse and things along that line. However,
an example, please.
Like indoctrinating them into religion. I'm with Richard Dawkins. I think that's intellectual child abuse, to indoctrinate your kid into religion.
But it's okay. You can't stop it.
I'm saying we shouldn't stop it.
Okay.
Because when we set the precedent of removing a parent's right to share their belief and their ideology with their child, there has got to be better reason than we find it despicable. There has to be
better
degree of harm. So that's why I think that's the kind of child abuse that we should, at least in a legal sense, completely allow, because getting rid of that sets a very dangerous precedent to where, you know, we decide if we set that precedent, which do you think is more likely, that will end people from indoctrinating their children into harmful religious beliefs, or will end society will choose to end atheists, right,
well,
to
where,
tell their kids there's no God?
Is there a line to be drawn?
I think the line has been drawn as far as documented abuse with, generally, I say it should be physical or physical ramifications.
Wow.
Well, yeah, I pretty much actually agree. In that case, we're talking about when do we intervene on behalf of somebody else's kid? When does our responsibility begin to intervene there? And obviously, it's really easy to say we should intervene as soon as there's physical abuse. We still draw a slight line, though, because corporal punishment is generally allowed, permitted, and not... a justification for intervention. And so because we can distinguish between those two types of...
Well, I would say physical damage over physical harm. It's rare that you'll see corporal punishment defended when there's physical damage.
Right. Okay. And that's a really good distinction. The problem is that when we're talking about what's going on in somebody's head and their emotional status, et cetera, it's a lot more difficult to assess. And it's going to be a lot more difficult to draw a line. I wouldn't be willing to say you can teach your kid anything you want and you can treat your kid in any way you want.
Short of actual physical damage.
And we're just not going to do anything about it. I think there's a couple things that we can and should do. And one is to obviously educate everybody, and especially parents and teenagers who will eventually become parents, as to what qualifies as abuse and what doesn't, as to what methods are reasonable to raise your child. I have no problem with somebody sharing their beliefs But I think there's also a line to be drawn when we allow somebody to do such emotional and intellectual tinkering with a kid, like they're some kind of experiment, to the point where we now know, to a reasonable degree of certainty, that this kid is going to have serious psychological problems later on in life.
Mm-hmm.
If I found out that my next door neighbors had engaged in this practice of teaching their kids that right is left and left is right, I don't think I'd say, hey, let's take their kids away from them. Obviously, they're incompetent. But I do think there is some sort of justification for some intervention, if nothing else, then to make sure that the kid is aware that not only, I mean, this isn't just a personal belief thing. This is a matter of, you know, labels and things right. we can identify. And I think that actually something like that would probably be very rapidly corrected when they get to school. And the teachers start teaching them things like left and right.
And schools were a lot, I mean, if we just educate society in general, that helps a lot. Like, people were railing child abuse with when Prussian Blue was featured on 60 Minutes or one of those news magazines.
Yeah.
And that also, to me, is the kind of thing that, yeah, I think it's intellectual abuse, but I think we should allow it. And I do think that educating society has corrected that to a large extent. Racism is very rare among youth compared to what it is a few generations ago.
It's obviously on the decline generation.
You always have people whose parents are very racist or grandparents are racist, and they broke from that because of the general education of society. Yeah. So I think that's the way to influence ideological abuse, or what we find abusive ideologically.
I, for the most part, agree. When we start talking about things like Prussian Blue, by the way, and for those who don't know what Prussian Blue is, it's a couple of
really awful singers.
Are they twins?
I think they're twins. That,
yeah.
They're twins or sisters, whatever. They are the iconic Aryan Nation daughters who sing these racist songs for, I guess their audience is primarily white supremacists, KKK, Aryan Nation types. We really get close to toeing a line there. And I don't, not only do I not have an answer, I don't know that there is any kind of easy answer as to should you intervene there. Boy, on some level, I'd really like somebody to intervene there. On the other hand, that level of indoctrination and where, when does it cross over to like cult stuff where parents can intervene, get their kids out of a cult, and we have to engage the services of a deprogrammer or, you know, things like that. Yeah, it's a tough call. And I think that those things should be considered on a case-by-case basis. And I think that any intervention, the best course of action that I can come up with anyway, is to let experts, and I'm talking about psychologists, child psychologists, behavioralists, things like that, assess a situation to determine what, if any, action should be taken.
Mm-hmm. But I don't see where we should step in for a parent sharing their opinions with their kid. There are a lot of opinions I don't like. I think it's extremely dangerous.
Sharing?
There's a difference
indoctrination,
between...
Indoctrination. There's a difference between indoctrination and sharing.
There's a difference...
No, there isn't with a young child.
Yeah.
And when you look at the way political opinions... when you have a young child and you're expressing your opinions, the child will take that to a large extent as truth in the formative years.
I on some level, you're absolutely correct about that's the way things normally happen. However, I don't agree that that's the way things necessarily happen. And the thing is that there's a difference between sharing what your beliefs are and telling them that they should share your beliefs, that your beliefs are in fact true. Take, for example, and I wish Russell was here to address this. I'm sure he's in the chat room itching to, if he's not already started typing, mention things like this. What he's done with his son is engaged more in how to think than what to think.
Right.
It's more of a, can you tell the difference between real and pretend? And when Ben asks a question, it's, here's my view on it, here's what I think, and or... instead of just expressing his opinion right off the bat, saying, well, what do you think about it? And letting the kid kind of work through it and say, you know, hey, we agree. I don't think that it's necessary. I think you can share your opinion without crossing over into indoctrination. I think generally that's not what happens, though. So,
well, but in limiting abuse to physical abuse and stuff, you sort of suggest that that children have no brains, have no minds that can be damaged. I mean, it's like
I just think it's too hard.
It is hard
to clearly
identify.
No one
said it'd be easy.
Yeah, and that's why we're not going to solve it.
That's not even worth doing because I think the amount of harm that any attempted solution will entail will be greater than the amount of good.
See, that's where
right
I disagree.
There. You might be right. I don't know.
That's where I disagree, in that just because it's hard doesn't mean it's not worth doing.
Because it's hard, but the extent to which it's hard and the ways in which it is hard lend themselves, I think, to more harm than good from possible solution attempts.
Yeah. And the way such a solution could be exploited. Yeah,
right.
It's a complicated mess.
It is.
And while we don't have any real solutions.
I just thought of a good example. Let's say a Christian family has a kid. They want to teach that kid that, you know, not to swear. Blasphemy is wrong. They won't say, well, in my opinion, I don't like this word. I think it's acceptable for them to say, don't say that. That is wrong. That is a situation that I think is perfectly reasonable for them to impart their beliefs on their child. And this is an extension
of that. There's
a
difference, though. Go ahead, Dad.
No, there's more complication here because there are things like that that really are a matter of opinion. That's, you know, political viewpoints and things like that that are dependent on certain types of values. And then there's indoctrination in something that's just factually incorrect.
But what was factually incorrect about what this woman was teaching her kid?
That
she is a worthless sinner who is of no value if it weren't for God?
I don't think that's factually incorrect. I think I disagree with it. But I think that's more opinion than something that you can say is – you can't prove it wrong.
You can't say that it's factually incorrect. You can say that it has not been established as correct in a factual sense.
Right. But you could say that about the blasphemy thing too.
Well, no, because and this is kind of slightly where I would disagree with you on profanity. Mm-hmm. Just in general, which is a topic that we're going to need to discuss here in just a minute anyway.
Shit.
So we're segueing.
I was going to cut together that bit and completely forgot.
So we're going to hit on profanity, but I want to start by hitting on it in this context since you just brought it up. I agree that it's fine for a parent to say that is a word that we don't use in mixed company. Or even, I'd rather you not say that ever. I think it's slightly different to say for them, and this is just my personal opinion on how I'd prefer to teach it, that's a bad word, it shouldn't be used. I'd rather say, you know what, there are no such thing as magical words. There is no such thing as a group of sounds that is intrinsically offensive. We take offense at things people say, and some people take offense at different things. But there are a group of words that are generally considered offensive or disturbing in quote-unquote polite society. And so if you resort to using these terms frequently, especially in the absence of any good point, you are going to look like a base element of society that is unable to communicate in terms of ideas.
That's the ideal way to approach it, but I don't think that's the only appropriate way to – like, let's say
– I want to see – I don't think your average parent has that much insight.
Yeah,
true.
Let's say you have a kid who sees a black person and calls him a nigger. I think most people would find it acceptable for the parent to say, don't you ever do that. You never – and just blanket statements of you just never do that. It is wrong to do that fucking period.
Right. I think
we find that acceptable, and that is in the same way that what this woman's doing, blatant indoctrination to achieve an end.
How about the obverse? Is it okay to say, yes, call them niggers? That's what they are.
I think that,
is that okay?
While I dislike it, I think that's something we should allow. Because in order to get rid of one and not the other, we actually have to come up with an objective
measure
standard. And you're just not going to do that because while I disagree with racists, who am I to say they're wrong in an absolute factual sense? We can say that some claims are wrong, but if someone says white people are better than black people,
the only way to save the kids is to change the parents.
Or just influence society and hope that the kid catches on, which is kind of what we've done. And I think it's worked really well. It's working right now for homosexuality. People my age, by and large, have almost no problems with homosexuality. And there are people I know in their 30s and 40s who, while they don't really have a problem with it, it makes them uncomfortable. And you go a bit above that to the 50s and 60s. They just don't like it, you know. And it's not a matter of people stepping in and changing the way their parenting happens. It's a matter of society as a whole changing a bit, and the kids will catch on for the most part.
So, going back to the racist comments, so most kids, unless it's been beaten out of them, will ask why.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Depending.
To me, well, certainly depending, which is why I said most of them, if they haven't had it beaten out of them, you know. And so if someone were to just say, because I said so, and if you say it again, I'm going to smack you.
Yeah,
that's one way that
I
some
think
people.
That's stupid, and I disagree with it, but I don't think we should step in. And then there are a lot of situations where you can say something and the kid's not going to ask why.
I think there's another line here that we're kind of blurring, and that is there's a distinction between what a parent may want to impart upon their kid, including don't say that word, or do say that word. And yet when they get out into the real world, when they have to interact with others, they very quickly find that it doesn't matter particularly what mom and dad said. They come to the realization that this is a word that is generally considered impolite, crude, offensive, whatever. That is, for all intents and purposes, an objective standard of reality.
Talking to the people around them that to determine what the
you have to
of the words are.
It's functionally objective.
Yes, you have to understand, if not exactly why this word or these words aren't used or aren't generally used. But also there are times when you do use the words. You can use the word. I mean, we use the word here in this conversation, so there's an exception when you're making an explanation. There is an exception in humor. I'm not a big fan of racist humor, but I will say that I've listened to, John Dr. Dirty Valby and some of David Allan Coe's underground stuff, and they are together some of the most vile, offensive, racial epithets and disgusting sexual stuff that you could ever hear, and yet they're funny. They are funny because on some level you know that they are not – well, in David Allan Coe's case, he may actually be a bit of a racist. I don't think Valby is necessarily a racist. I think what he's doing is a bit of art where he's engaging in let's play with language and let's get people over the shock value of these comments, which kind of leads us to what happened on the last Nonprofits.
Okay, what happened on the next
Nonprofits? I called Kay Hagan a twat.
Oh, yeah, okay.
And I got exactly one email complaining.
Yes.
In your defense, Kahagan is a twat.
Now, you have no objective standard by which to make that claim. Here's the thing.
I don't need objective standards.
We have talked about profanity on this show a number of times. Jeff had a big, long discussion about this.
Oh, yeah.
When I was still fairly new to the show, after the Ann Coulter is a cunt episode, where that wording was used, I don't know, 85,000 times. It got to the point where it was no longer.
It was essentially a
we were angry.
Yeah, it was no longer the word had lost any impact.
Yeah,
and just became kind of meaningless, useless.
Mm-hmm.
In my defense over the Kay Hagan comment, I rant so often about things that on occasion it just makes sense to punctuate with words that are going to shock people. And sure. The effectiveness of this, I think, is demonstrated by the fact that it got a complaint. That guy's not going to forget what I said.
Right.
And as long as I've said something of substance along with it, it's not like I just came on and said, oh, by the way, Kay Hagan's a twat, talk to you later. As long as there was something else of substance there, then I think that it works in the same way that we could end every sentence with a period, but we use exclamation points on right. occasion.
Well, hopefully he didn't come away with just the word twat.
I hope not. But it is a valid point, and I wanted to listen to, you know, I tried to get some feedback from some other listeners to find out what people thought, because, you know, we are, on some levels, representatives of atheism to the world at large.
True.
Although the focus of this show is generally tuned towards atheists, and it draws an audience that I think, in general, is pretty much fine with what we do.
Right.
I've never used that word on the Atheist Experience, and it's rare that I use any obscenities on the Atheist Experience. I have on occasion.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
But it's rare. And
we make up for it in the booth.
Yes. And we make up for it here in the nonprofits as well. But it's not like we just do, you know, reminds me of the old Eddie Murphy bit. Where, you know, Cosby had evidently complained about the filth in Eddie Murphy's act, and he says, you know, it's not like I could just come out and do a curse show, you know. You know, cock suck, fuck shit, fuck all you motherfuckers, thank you, good night, you know, and walk off. There's comedy in his stuff. There's
context.
There is context, and there is content surrounding it. Mm-hmm. I think that we probably, no, in my opinion, we definitely crossed a line on the Ann Coulter episode. But the objection wasn't just that I used profanity. It was that I used something that I found that is generally sexist, that there was something misogynistic or sexist in the same way that, you know, cunt is derogatory towards women. However, we've used bitch a number of times, and mm-hmm. nobody's ever complained about the sexism in that. And the point that I made to him was that when I call the Pope Benedict or say that so-and-so is a dick, I don't get any complaints right. from people saying that I'm being sexist against men. I'm not being naive here. I understand that there is a sexist component to this. I think it's more pronounced in the United States than it is, for example, in the UK. The people that I've talked to in the UK, and, of course, the movies that I've seen from the UK, twat and cunt, I mean, that's you're going to call your mates that when they're just being stupid at the pub. I mean, it has nothing to do anymore. The words have begun to change in their usage. I would think that it would be clear from the context of what I was saying, that I was not in any way attacking Kay Hagan because she's a woman. I could care less that she's a woman. It's kind of, to me, using the T word was along the lines of using the correct pronoun when I, you know.
A male asshole is a dick. A female asshole is a twat.
Yeah, well.
Yeah, you know.
So
just call her a dick next time.
But. And it's like Bill Maher uses bimbo and says, you know, there are guys that are bimbos. On some level, yeah, it's not completely fair. It's like my friend who used to use the N-word a lot and said, no, I use it towards white people as well. Okay.
I'll still get you beat up.
Yeah. I understand that.
Justifiably
but
so.
The black guy standing next to you probably doesn't understand that, and you're probably going to get your ass kicked at some point. But so what I did was ask around, and surprisingly, and I also pointed out that it was a guy who was complaining that I was being sexist towards women, and I got several responses from some of our female listeners. It was like, no, you're right, she was a twat because of what she did, not in general. I may end up liking Kay Hagan as a person. I have no idea. I'm damn glad that she won, that she whooped Liddy Dole's ass, because Dole ran this despicable campaign that started all this, you know, shit in the first place by using atheist and godless as if they were dirty words. Guess what? They're not. And if you want to use them as if they're dirty words, then I'm going to call you dirty words in response. Na-na-na-boo-boo.
Like, I generally, when speaking to the general public, I call plenty of guys cunt as well. But I see no problem distinguishing and using concentrat for women and using dick or scrote for guys.
Scrote?
Scrote.
Scrote?
Oh.
Oh, scrote. Okay.
But I don't have a problem with differentiating it by sexes because, as you mentioned, no one calls you a sexist for using the word dick.
Yeah.
And the thing is, cunt and twat are rarely used in the States. Dick has been used for a long time. So dick, because it's been used a lot, has lost a bit of its emphasis. And if we use cunt and twat, they will stop becoming – they will lose their sexist connotation to a large degree.
Mm-hmm. However, despite all of that, I'm declaring for the rest of today's episode a moratorium on cunt and twat.
Assholes,
that
okay?
Depends on the news stories.
Yes.
We'll just see how well everybody does. Because
some of the news stories are going to push
that. I'm not going to limit myself from a word.
You don't
for
have,
novelty.
You don't have to censor yourself. I'd like to think that what we end up doing for the most part in the show is having conversations like this, providing some thought, some insight. Some people agree, some don't. We're not always going to be right. As a matter of fact, we have some corrections and additional information and things to kind of rediscuss this week. But, you know, yes, occasionally there will be words of vulgarity and profanity and obscenity and whatever kind of label you want to put on base language. So
I'm shocked.
If you're opposed, I mean, obviously I think by now that I never geared this show towards kids.
Right.
Or Schilling wouldn't be here.
Think of the children.
So,
I love children. I just can never finish a whole one.
Yes. Chocolate sauce.
But what I like, though, is people get outraged at language. Like with the Kay Hagan story. And I'm not accusing the guy who complained of this because...
I think he had a sincere, valid objection and concern. I just wanted to address
it. But when you're talking about a story like that and you use the word twat, they have the gall to say that the word twat was the vulgar aspect?
Yeah, that's my thing that I've said repeatedly. I'm not stupid. I understand that people are going to take offense at some things that I say. And there are some people who, at the mere mention of one of those terms that they consider vulgar, will ignore everything else I say. They will tune me out, and nothing I say is relevant anymore. I know there are people like that out there. I just largely don't give a fuck about those people.
That's one of the reasons that when I'm talking online or in forums or things like that, I use plenty of profanity, and it acts as a good filter because I know that the people who see nothing but profanity and won't listen aren't going to be reasonable people.
Now, on the other hand, like I said, I'm not an idiot. There are plenty of times when I have a conversation with somebody where I specifically restrain myself in order to make sure that the individual that I'm talking to is as receptive as possible to what I'm talking about. That's what I end up doing on the Atheist Experience most of the time. Nonprofit shows geared at a slightly different audience. I don't think there are a whole lot of Christians listening. Well, that's not true. There are some Christians listening, and they've even written in to say that they're, you know, trying to find out what the enemy's up to. Here's an idea. Why don't you ask God? He supposedly knows. But this show is geared toward a different group of people, so I don't need to hopefully censor myself all the time. But
reminds me of in the episode of Bullshit where they did profanity, and I changed my position on this pretty recently. In the episode where they discussed profanity, they didn't use any vulgarity. In the show, they didn't call anyone an asshole, nothing. And at first, I didn't like it because I thought it was just shitty novelty. You know, like, oh, we can do it without. But I rewatched it recently, and what they were trying to do, it finally clicked for me. I don't know why I hadn't before, was you realize how weak the show is without it, to the extent that they're still making the same ideas, but they're lacking the impact and emphases that they usually had. So in that respect, I can get behind it. But I don't like people who say, well, there's nothing wrong with using bad words, and to prove it, I'll go without using bad words. That just lends credence to the other side.
My traditional answer to this ages ago was words don't have any magical power. People can be upset and offended over all kinds of things. there are things that I am... I used to say I was impossible to offend, and then I realized that's not true. I'm just offended by things that most people aren't offended by, and I'm not offended by things that most people are. The various vulgarities, profanity...
The use of Google as a verb, that one bothers me more than any obscenity.
Oh, see, I love that.
I hate it with a fucking passion.
What?
The use of Google as a verb.
Go Google it.
I fucking hate that for multiple reasons. I don't like it when people use nouns as verbs. But I also don't like it when people will use one search engine to describe searching in general, because I think that
there are other search engines.
There are. I also hate Google as a search engine. I think it's shit.
Wow. I haven't used another search engine in a decade.
I avoid Google like the plague.
Anyway, but the things that I tend to find offensive are the things like what Liddy Dole did. The things that I find offensive are ideas that are harmful to society, ideas that are necessarily divisive. And last week, at the end of the show, at the Atheist Experience, I rattled off a quickly ad hoc list of things that I would qualify as sins. And that's one that probably should have been added to the list. But anyway, we need to move on.
All right. News. I'm going to start with the lighthearted stuff first. The lighthearted stuff first,
oh.
Because I get to say things like, monks brawl at Jerusalem shrine. Israeli police have had to restore order at one of Christianity's holiest sites after a mass brawl broke out between monks in Jerusalem's old city. Fighting erupted between Greek Orthodox and Armenian monks at the Church of the Holy Sepulchre, the traditional site of Christ's crucifiction. Cool.
They should,
monks.
If they wanted to ever make money, they should put that shit on pay-per-view.
Yes. I was going to say, is that on YouTube right now?
Yes, there's video out there.
There's video.
And that guy in the pink robe, he was kicking a lot of ass. No, they're like, when you watch it, there is one guy wearing this ridiculously ornate pink robe, and... Most of them, you know, when the cops were holding him back, they'd call. This guy just kept breaking free and started wailing on somebody else.
Cool. Two-fisted holiness.
on a. Do you have the one about the priest and two nuns?
Yes.
Before you move on, does it say why the fighting broke out?
Yeah. There's an argument. Basically. There are these different denominations that are sharing a portion of the temple or something.
Uh-huh.
And one denomination wanted to have a little procession through, and they hadn't cleared it with the other denomination, so they physically tried to block them. And what was amusing is the news story goes into all the other types of disagreements. Like there's construction work that badly needs to be done to bring this building up to code, and none of them can agree to actually get it done. Then there's a ladder that's really dangerous that's been up for 60 years because no one knows who's supposed to take it down, and none of them will do it. It's
wow.
Religion makes you incapable of change.
Yep.
So your ladder stays up for 60 years.
Yes. Here's another great headline.
Hang on, because I have a theory about this last one.
Yeah,
I don't think there were any doctrinal differences at all. I think it's a big publicity stunt because all the Shaolin monk movies did so,
there you go.
Did so well that they wanted to have the movies. Jewish and Orthodox monk movies.
So this is going to be the next
big
Jews push.
Well, the Jews were the mediators, I suppose, in that, because the Israeli cops came in.
Well, if you thought that last headline was good, check this one out. Priest smashes chair over Italian restaurant owner's head as nuns kick him in the stomach. Awesome. An Italian restaurant owner was allegedly attacked by a priest and two nuns in what witnesses described as a Wild West-style saloon bar brawl. Cool.
I love the Catholic Church's response to the allegation, though.
Oh, let's see here. Told police he got into an argument with the priest who smashed a chair over his head. The nuns followed up by kicking him in the stomach. Stunned passerbys were shocked to see tables and chairs being hurled around the bar and promptly called the police. I came down to try and calm things down, but the priest hit me with a chair and ended up on the floor. Then the two sisters started kicking me, insulting me with unrepeatable words, the unnamed owner said in a statement. He was taken to hospital with injuries to his neck and bruising to his abdomen. A lawyer for the clergy disputed his version of events, noting that the nuns had a combined age of 160.
I like how that's apparently a defense.
Apparently, but that's a defense. Apparently, old people can't wail on your ass.
How many nuns was it?
Two.
None. Okay. Oh.
Three, sir. This establishment was being occupied illegally, said lawyer Gaetano Di Verti. As to the alleged aggression, I would only say that the two nuns have a combined age of about 160. For the rest, it will be up to the magistrate to clear up. But the clergy members deny the allegations. Yeah, duh.
Okay, look, I'm sorry. I realize that, you know, not everybody is a strapping tough guy, but if you're getting your stomach kicked by two 80-plus-year-old nuns, you're
to be fair,
getting hit on the head with a chair.
That was after having a chair broken over his head.
Okay.
You may not be able to defend yourself at that point.
I'm pretty sure, though, that unless I was unconscious, I could fight off a couple of 80-year-old nuns.
Yeah, well, the thing I like about this is the bit at the end here. The priests and nuns belong to a religious order, the Disciples of Santa Teresa and the Baby Jesus, which owns the lease on the premises and reportedly wants the property back. The Baby Jesus.
Santa Teresa and the Baby Jesus.
So, wow. I guess the moral of the story is, if you rent from Catholics, don't be late on the fucking rent.
That's right.
We're going to have to break your fingers.
Ah, yes.
Look, I brought my two nuns with me. They will rough you up.
And another wonderful headline. Linda reminds us that vicar went to hospital with potato stuck in bottom. A vicar attended hospital with a potato stuck up his bottom and claimed it got there after he fell onto the vegetable while naked. Yes.
And Ted Haggard is completely heterosexual.
Completely. The clergyman in his 50s told nurses he had been hanging curtains when he fell backwards onto his kitchen table. He happened to be nude at the time of the mishap, said the vicar, who insisted he had not been playing a sex game. The vicar had to undergo a delicate operation to extract the vegetable, one of a range of odd items medics in Sheffield have had to remove from people's backsides or genitals. Not this one person.
Does it say what kind of potato?
No. They leave that as a mystery.
Because that makes a difference.
Mm-hmm. Does it?
Well, yeah. I mean, yeah, like new potatoes? Because, I mean, if it's a new potato, that's just unimpressive.
Yes, the doctors were told this story, and they said, but it's not up to me to question his story. He had to undergo surgery to have it removed. She advised anyone tempted to use such objects in sex games to think again. It can be very dangerous and potentially life-threatening.
We're not saying that the vicar intentionally shoved this up his butt.
Not at all.
But if you're getting that idea from this, please don't.
Well, it reminds me in one of Ricky Gervais' stand-up shows. He retells a story where a guy had a bottle of Worcestershire or some sauce bottle stuck up his ass. And he said that he got home, he was locked out, the upstairs window was open. So he took off his belt to climb the thing, and his pants fell, and he fell down, and the bottle went. That was his story.
Uh-huh.
There was a condom on the bottle, which kind of undermines.
Well, what I like about this story is at the end. A hospital trust spokesman in Sheffield
said... I like
said,
what's at the end, too.
Like all busy hospitals, we do see some unusual accidents. But our staff deals with them in a discreet, professional, and kind way.
By reporting it to
discreet?
The press.
Discreet?
Hey, you all, wait till you hear what happened in the ER today.
And he had a collar on. Nice.
And discreet? For another amusing story that I'm sure is coming up, I've stated before, I do generally oppose vandalism and cheap shit like that, but I'm also of the mind that if you're going to do something, you do something right. And there's a group of mysterious Russians who
It's coming up. He has.
Certainly took that to heart.
I wanted to say, since you mentioned Ricky Gervais, that tonight is the premiere of his new stand-up special on HBO.
Oh, Fame?
Huh?
This one's Fame.
It's brand new. Tonight's the first. I don't know if it's got a name.
He's already done, because I know there was initially going to be the three part with Animals, Politics, and Fame. I don't know if he's already.
In any case, it's like on at 9 or 10 on HBO tonight. Mm-hmm. I'm recording it, so. Because we love Ricky.
But yeah, here's another headline. Russian church taken by thieves.
Now, what does that mean, Dennis? Well,
200-year-old church building has disappeared from a village in central Russia, officials from the Russian Orthodoxy Church say. The building had stood near the village of Komarova since 1809. It was intact in July, but sometime in early October, thieves made off with it, brick by brick, they said. Now, wait a minute.
Why are they saying
thieves and not miracle? True. I mean, it is a church. It has something to do with religion, and religion has something to do with miracles, and you'd think, you know, the disappearance of a whole building would be kind of miraculous.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, if God would have done it, he'd have done it right.
They leaped to the conclusion of thieves.
Well, they left part of the wall.
Yeah, God wouldn't leave the foundation.
Which, that's true.
Although he might have, because you might need evidence. Because if a bunch of, I mean, you do have priests who are obviously sticking stuff up their butts. So if a bunch of them ran out and said, look, here's an empty spot in the woods where we used to have a church and it's now vanished. Everybody, no, there was never any church there. Come on.
Yeah, the disappearance of the Church of the Resurrection, some 300 kilometers.
The Church
north
of the Resurrection.
East, yeah, of Moscow was not immediately noticed. It was an out-of-the-way area and was not being used, although church officials were considering resuming services there.
So they weren't able to resume or resurrect services in the Church of the Resurrection.
Now all that remained of the two-story building, a school before it was turned over to the church, were its foundations and some sections of wall, the church said. Thieves often target churches in rural Russia. Religious icons can be sold and church structures sold off for building materials.
And that's one thing that actually
weird
is really cool
stole
about
church.
Looking at stuff in Russia, because they have an interesting religious history, especially in this century. They tore down a lot of churches. They put them to such great use. There are some huge cathedrals that are public swimming pools that just look really cool. And then a lot of the subways have church architecture and mosaic murals and all this stuff just down in the subway. So you have these marble arches everywhere, and it's really cool.
I go, hey, Russians, we've got a lot of churches here in the U.S. If you could see clear.
I drive past 20 or 30 just trying to get to the highway.
Yeah. We got lots here.
Unfortunately, most of ours don't have very impressive architecture.
No, sheet metal and
yeah,
crap.
Most of them are pretty kind of eh.
Yeah, may not want them, but neither do we.
How many churches have been foreclosed on in this new economy. Oh wait, never mind.
Okay, I'm running out of amusing stuff now.
Okay,
we're going to enter the ugly stuff now.
Well, they aren't mutually exclusive.
Vatican to use psychologists to weed out homosexual priests. Trainee priests suggested of being gay should be weeded out by psychologists and banned from joining the Catholic Church, the Vatican has said. You know, I think they'd be better used in weeding out the pedophiles in the frickin' Catholic Church, don't you think?
Actually,
I mean, first and foremost,
I'm in favor.
I mean, they're Catholics. The homosexuals and pedophiles are one and the same.
And in fact, that's what this story kind of says.
Yeah, they're propagating this same old. On the whole, I think Thad and I, if I'm understanding what he was getting ready to say, because I'm psychic, I would probably be okay with the plan, because my objection is that a lot of men. Particularly, I'm sure there are women too. I don't know. I'm not as knowledgeable on nuns, but who have been raised to think that there's something wrong with them because they're gay. Mm-hmm. go off and hide in the priesthood because celibacy prevents them. And some of them engage in activities after they're a priest that are problematic. I'm not making the fallacious link between homosexuals and pedophiles. They're two different things, and that's what the Vatican's doing wrong here, is they're trying to link the two. Mm-hmm. Really, it would be nice if we could say, you know what? We're just not going to – the Vatican is no longer going to accept homosexuals into the priesthood, except unless they're open about it. And then, granted, I have no control over what the Vatican does. But I think it would be a benefit to men and women who are trying to hide away in a celibate religion because they have this oppressive guilt over who they really are, to identify them. And who knows, maybe we can prevent them from becoming
further damaged.
Lifelong damaged goods in a frock.
One of the problems I have is, who the fuck is a psychologist to tell you whether or not you're a homosexual?
True.
Psychology has its uses, but I don't believe for a fucking minute that some shrink can tell you what you're attracted to.
Yep. Cardinal Zenon Grotolowski, prefect of the Catholic Educational Congregation, said that a celibate candidate with deep-seated homosexual tendencies should be barred, not because he commits a sin, but because homosexuality is a deviation, an irregularity, a wound that would prevent him from fulfilling his duties. The guidelines, approved by Pope Benedict the 16th, right, are designed to prevent the sort of sex scandals involving pedophile priests which have rocked the Catholic Church in recent years, triggering lawsuits costing hundreds of millions of dollars in settlements. And that is the incorrect.
This is where they've
connection.
You ignorant.
Well, and right, I like that they jumped to, well, the pedophile priest thing cost us a lot of money.
Yeah.
That was the downside.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The decree appears to ignore the consensus among sex abuse experts that homosexuals are no more likely to molest children than heterosexuals. The ruling outraged Italian gay rights organizations. If the principal requirement for being a priest is chastity, sexual orientation should be irrelevant, said Franco Grinilli, president of GayNet. Another homosexual group said the Catholic Church was full of gay priests and threatened to out them to demonstrate the hypocrisy of the Vatican's stance.
You're being a dick, so we're going to be bigger dicks?
Apparently so. We offer our, these gay priests saying, we offer ourselves as consultants to help the Italian Catholic hierarchy trace all the homosexuals hiding away in the Vatican, in the College of Cardinals, in dioceses, in parishes, in monasteries, and so on, said Aurelian Mancuso, the president of Arcigay. It would certainly be a haul to make the sacred buildings tremble. Now, that's wrong, but...
funny.
And it would be a terrible thing to do, but boy, it would be an interesting thing to watch. Man.
Now, I'm not sure I completely understood that because I had to get up for a second. Mm-hmm. Who's volunteering to find and out them?
There are another homosexual group.
Right.
Called Arcigay.
Are they planning on just seeing how many priests they can tempt into sexual relations and then say, oh, look,
I don't
we found
know
one.
How they're going to do it. They apparently know who's who and what's what there.
It reminds me of what Flint did
when
he put out the call for anybody who'd had any kind of sexual affair with somebody from, you know, Congress and the government in a way,
cool.
as a way of kind of exposing the hypocrisy of the people who were going after Clinton.
Yep.
And, well, with Flint's thing, it's more tactful because then at least it's someone involved talking about their shit.
Yeah.
They're not running around outing a bunch of people who've decided to be in the closet. And I wouldn't trust this group at all to address it with any level of honesty.
So we've got two groups that we don't trust offering to resolve a problem that doesn't exist. Wow.
Yep.
It's almost like the elections a couple weeks ago.
They can get a guy down there with a divining rod to find the homosexuals.
Yes.
That's what they should do to top it off.
Well, I think that's what they were offering was their divining rods.
Or maybe some rainbow crystals.
Yep.
So you did read my mind, pretty much. But in addition to that, in a way, I am in favor of the Catholic Church, or churches in general, being more and more bigoted so that more and more people will reject them.
Yeah.
Right.
Yep.
Oh, yeah.
And on that note.
And it reminds me, and I'll let you get to this in a half second. There's been a bunch of big discussion, and doing this for my own amusement, I realize there are people out there who won't agree. But I was watching Bill Maher the other night, and for the umpteenth time, because Sarah Palin has been pimping herself out to every TV show on the planet this last week, and there are people talking about, you know, is she going to run for president in 2012? And the Republican Party is evidently a little split on whether or not they would like that. But Ashton Kutcher, who said some reasonably intelligent things last night, screwed up and said that, well, you know, the Republicans don't want her to run, and the Democrats... No. The Democrats do, in fact, want her to run, Ashton. I guarantee you.
Yes, please.
Please run.
Make it an easy one.
Caribou Barbie, you go back home, you prep yourself for a few years, you come back stronger than ever. We want you to run. I want you to be the Democratic candidate. Or Republican candidate. Yeah, I don't want you to be the Democrat. Big mistake.
But, okay. No communion for Obama supporters.
Obama supporters?
Obama supporters. Sorry, you say Obama, I say Obama.
No, you say Obama. We say it right. Yes.
A South Carolina Roman Catholic priest
has told his parishioners... Because Catholics are screwing everything up.
That's right. That they should refrain from receiving Holy Communion if they voted for Barack Obama, because the Democratic president-elect supports abortion, and supporting him constitutes material cooperation with intrinsic evil.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The way he went about this, to me, violates his church's nonprofit status.
Immediately.
Yes. However, I think it could have been reasonable if he had said, if you supported any candidate that is pro-choice, don't take communion, and kept it general. But if you voted for Obama, you shouldn't get communion. I think that is an abuse of power.
And I don't.
No?
I think it's abuse of power with regard to the endorsement. No. See, the thing is, the election's over.
It's an endorsement
There is no conflict of interest when there's no voting left to be done, when there's no encouragement of support. Now, yes, we have the potential of 4 years running again. Yes, I think you're right in that it would have been better to say if you supported pro-choice candidates, you're a crappy Christian. But I don't know that it is a clear church-state violation at this point, now that the election's over, to say if you voted for this candidate who won. I don't see that that's necessarily. Now, at what point do we get, you know, towards the next election where it would be? You know, if you folks who supported Obama last time, if you support him again, you know, okay, now.
See, I don't see where the vote is. I don't think the timing of the vote is relevant to the fact.
Because there's no potential for change. The whole point of setting these restrictions is so that they cannot use their religion to influence the election. They cannot make the claim, for example, you know, once the voting's done, there's nothing left to conflict
about. So should they be able to endorse the Republican Party on the whole? Should they say if you're not a Republican, you don't get communion? I think they should avoid endorsing a political figure or a political party, period.
Yeah. Now that the election's done.
I don't think the election's.
What restrictions do we have on what we can say?
Well, yeah. It's not a matter. See, the whole thing about endorsement, you're allowed to talk about issues. And you're allowed to talk about people. We do it all the time.
Right.
It's granted, I don't ever say that, you know, if you voted for Liddy Dole, you're a shitty atheist. Well, I probably should. But in the case, the whole purpose is to make sure that people aren't being motivated to action by the person who's the authority in their religion.
Right.
And now that the action item is over, there's nothing that motivates them.
See, I think the action
nothing
is
could be motivated
always
to.
Going on. I the election aspect is of less relevance to me than motivating them to support or go against a political figure or political party.
I would agree
part of
that,
it, but
I would agree that as far as personal preference on how they're going to intertwine them, that's the case. I'm talking about where you actually draw the line with regard to church state separation from a legal standpoint, with regard to their tax status. The whole purpose of saying you can talk about issues but not endorse or support candidates or parties is to prevent them saying you guys need to go vote.
But unless
for
it has
X.
a clear stipulation saying during the X number of months before an election, it should be taken in an absolute sense.
Okay, here's a convenient and self-serving point made in the story. It was not an attempt to make a partisan point, Newman said in a telephone interview Thursday. In fact, in this election, for the sake of argument, if the Republican candidate had been pro-abortion and the Democratic candidate had been pro-life, everything that I wrote would have been exactly the same.
Mm-hmm.
Except for the name. He was talking about an issue, and it's a matter of happenstance as to who is on what side of an issue.
But it's not just parties that we...
But it's this is a point where I would think... I would agree with your point about party, but not agree with it with regard to an individual, because he's talking about a single issue, and it happens to be the case that this person was on the wrong side of the issue, and he's talking about it after the fact. But I'm not a lawyer, so, and I'd still agree with you on what the preferred tactic would be, that they avoid candidates and partisanship at all. It's a tough. It's a very fine line to walk.
Has anything happened with the network of churches that decided to just outright endorse McCain?
I haven't heard anything about that. I haven't heard a thing.
I think they should just voluntarily start paying taxes.
That'd be the right way
to
do it. But they want to get sued so they can fight it and overturn the restriction.
Yeah, what's kind of odd here is it says... a few church leaders said parishioners risk their mortal soul by voting for candidates who support abortion rights. But bishops differ on whether Catholic lawmakers and voters should refrain from receiving communion if they diverge from church teaching on abortion. Each bishop sets policy in his own diocese. In their annual fall meeting, the nation's Catholic bishops vowed Tuesday to forcefully confront the Obama administration over its support for abortion rights. So apparently, this kind of stuff is common.
Well, does it have
they
the
can make their own
there's
rules?
There's a quote from one bishop who dissented with this idea, and what he said was just goddamn. That this bishop who's saying that Obama supporters shouldn't take communion is risking the souls of his parishioners. Yep. So he thinks that his God is such an asshole that he's going to punish the people for the bishop not letting them take communion?
Yeah,
and he's okay with that? Like, if he had said
Don't
he's risking
me,
his own ass.
I just work here. It's pretty crazy.
All right, you'll have to put on your Christian hat for a second, which I know yours is not nearly so pointy as mine is. When he says that this bishop is risking the souls of his parishioners, it's not because God would punish them for what the bishop did. It's the bishop, as the leader of the church, would influence them in a direction that leads them away from what God wants them to do. That's the point that he's making.
Then it still just goes to another weakness of the God.
Oh, yeah. God's incredibly weak.
Well, the priest is doing the wrong thing.
The fundamental weakness of the God from this aspect is the fact that if in fact he did exist, he's definitely not being clear about what he wants from people. And the fact that most of the people are willing to trust whatever guy in a frock happens to be standing in front of them spewing stuff out. It's a problem with the entire system. But I just wanted to clarify that little point. Because I'm nothing if not fair to my delusional friends. Having been one of them for so long, I get it. I don't quite get it as much as I used to. And I'm talking about understanding it. I'm not talking about sex. That was supposed to be funnier.
Right. And try harder.
All right. That's what she said. Oh, all right, go ahead.
And, of course, another story would be the Catholic bishops warn Obama they'll fight on abortion. Their statement is to focus on opposing evil.
Mm-hmm.
And it's all just...
Why don't you clean up your own backyard first?
Right.
I mean, before I understand we have a fundamental disagreement about whether or not this is evil. Mm-hmm. But, you know.
Well, I disagree with that sentiment. They should be working on cleaning up their own backyard, but I don't think that they should... put other priorities and other interests on hold while they do that.
Well,
yeah, but then we can call
agree.
On the irony.
I agree, but what they're trying to do here is claim the moral high ground, and they don't have it. They don't remotely have it.
They're trying to claim a moral high ground on a particular issue at a time, though. They're not saying, "Well, we're the Catholic Church; we're above reproach, and we say it's wrong, so you should agree." They are actually making arguments saying, we're right on this issue because X and Y, you're wrong.
You okay. Then in that case, then they're just still wrong.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But that's my opinion. So, what else have we?
Okay. Now, I've been seeing lots of stories about the child witches of Nigeria.
A lot of people sent me stuff.
Yeah.
I'm ashamed to say that because of the amount of work that I had to do this week, I did not study up on this subject. So enlighten us.
Right. Ostracized, vulnerable, and frightened. Let's see. Mary is a pretty 5-year-old girl with big brown eyes and a father who kicked her out into the streets in one of the most dangerous parts of the world. Her crime? The local priest had denounced her as a witch and blamed her evil powers for causing her mother's death. And now she wanders streets in southeastern Nigeria, sleeping rough, struggling to stay alive. And was found by British charity worker and today lives at a refuge in Akawa Ibom, province with 150 other children who have been branded witches, blamed for all their family's woes, and abandoned. So apparently this is something that's happening a lot in Nigeria, and I guess in other places. Mary and the others at the shelter are the lucky ones, for they at least are alive. Many of those branded child witches are murdered, hacked to death with machetes, poisoned, drowned, or buried alive in an attempt to drive Satan out of their soul. The devil's children are identified by powerful religious leaders at extremist churches where Christianity and traditional beliefs have combined to produce a deep-rooted belief in and fear of witchcraft.
There's only a couple of possibilities here. One is that the kids are demon-spawn, evil, powerful witches,
right,
and that these priests are able to discern, discern them.
Two
is that they're not, which means either the priests are delusional or they're evil. They are taking out their fears, obsessions, confusion, whatever, on kids.
Well, that would be delusional, though.
I think those are definitely tied together. But I'm...
And you know what they have in common with all theists?
What's that?
Faith.
Now... If those kids are, in fact, you know, powerful beings, I guess they'd probably be powerful enough to hide it so they look just like innocent children.
Or
so,
at least prevent themselves from being buried alive.
Yeah.
You'd think they'd be able to defeat their captors.
Well, maybe dick thievery doesn't come in handy when you're being covered in dirt.
Could be. I don't know.
Speaking of being covered in dirt.
Oh.
we have an update slash correction on the...
Oh, yes.
Sharia law stoning of the 13-year-old
adulteress
slash rape victim.
Right. We, in an early report, it was stated that the woman who was stoned asked for Sharia law
you know,
and asked to be
executed according to the will of Allah and all this stuff. And now we find that she really wasn't a woman. She was a 13-year-old girl.
Yeah, but I think we knew that.
Well, it's...
And...
I would say that given the society in the age of 13, she could be a woman at that age, depending on how the society operates. There's an arguably a significant difference between a 13-year-old and a society where they finish their basic education early, begin work, begin family, all that shit earlier. I don't think you can judge it the same way you would judge an American 13-year-old.
Yeah, but fine, I don't fucking care.
Yeah.
Don't kill me, she said, according to the man who wanted to remain anonymous. A few minutes later, more than 50 men threw stones. Numerous eyewitnesses said she was forced into a hole, buried up to her neck, then pelted with stones until she died in front of more than 1,000 people last week. But let's see. Let's see if I can find... Okay, Amnesty International has reported that at one point during the stoning, Amnesty International has been told by numerous eyewitnesses that nurses were instructed to check whether the girl was still alive when buried in the ground. They removed her from the ground, declared that she was still alive, and she was replaced in the hole where she had been buried for the stoning to continue. An individual calling himself Shikaya was quoted on Radio Shabelle saying, "The evidence came from her side, and she officially confirmed her guilt when she told us that she is happy with the punishment under Islamic law." In contradiction to this claim, a number of eyewitnesses have told Amnesty International she struggled with her captors and had to be forcibly carried into the stadium.
Well,
inside the stadium, militia members opened fire when some of the witnesses to the killing attempted to save her life and shot dead a boy who was a bystander. An Al-Shabaab spokesman was later reported to have apologized for the death of the child and said the militia member would be punished.
I wonder if he's going to be buried.
I wouldn't go to the extent of saying that her pleading and struggling during the execution contradicts reports that she said that it was appropriate. I don't think there's a clear contradiction there.
I agree. She may have very well said, "I want to be punished under Sharia law," and then when it came time for it, she struggled and objected. But that's the point that matters to me. It's not the. It's like the no means no.
To an extent,
she might have said, "You know, hey, yeah." Let's go back to your place, and you know, I might even possibly be interested in sex later. But at some point, if she says no, then you don't get to have sex with her. And I'd say that in a case like this, if somebody happened to say, "Yeah, I'm fine with being punished under Sharia law," and then when it came time to actually do it, they clearly did not want that to happen.
There's a huge difference.
What?
When a woman expresses interest in sex, there is understood to be the fact that she has an out at any time. She can change her mind. It's not definitive and it's not absolute. When you agree to a court of law, I sign up for a credit card. After I rack up a few thousand dollars of debt, I change my mind and don't want a credit card anymore.
I think you're making a case that just isn't there. It's not like she signed a contract saying, "Yeah, you can kill me even if I object later."
She said she agreed to Sharia law.
It's possible that. Here's the thing. We've talked about this before with regard to adjudication.
Right.
Under the law, if you forgo the standard legal system and agree to adjudication, you are bound by those results. If, however, you opt for, which is the whole reason why we eventually, I think, as a group, concluded that Sharia law should not be a viable option in, for example, the UK, where they were trying to institute
it. Over criminal matters, anyway.
I'm opposed to it over civil matters, too, because the person is giving up any chance of fair recourse through the regular legal system.
Aren't.
Yes, they are. You should always have, if you agree to arbitration under civil matters, whether it's an arbiter or Sharia law or whatever, we did find out that there may be some possibility of appeal in the system that was there at the UK. Now, I'd say that this would certainly qualify the same, that when she originally agreed to be punished under Sharia law, later on, she essentially voiced her objection and should have been allowed to
seek... Let's clarify one thing. I believe what you read said that the sheik, who was one of the participants in this big punishment, claimed that she said that.
Right.
Right?
Right.
That's all we have to go on.
That's all we have to go on for any of it.
But I'm saying that it doesn't matter. I'm saying that...
I agree with you that it doesn't matter, but... Schilling said she said this, and we don't actually know that she said that, especially
right.
under these kind of suspicious yeah. circumstances. We don't even know that she actually agreed to it.
Yeah, the difference here is that Schilling thinks that if she did agree, then her later objection becomes irrelevant.
I'm not saying it becomes irrelevant.
And the reports
I'm saying it becomes cause for like some states in the U.S., I don't know if there are any anymore, but for a while, some states will allow you to choose your method of execution. Some people, when they were going to be executed, said, well, I don't want the lethal injection. I want that. And it would be something that's a little more intimidating. Like they want to be hanged or they would want, you know. And then when they get there, they change their mind. They fight. They plead. They're like, no, I want lethal injection. I don't want this. They have to fucking do it. And I don't think we should pity them. They made a decision knowing that decision was going to be final, was going to have a huge determinancy, and changing their mind later, it's too little too late.
Sorry, I'm going to feel sorry for a 13-year-old girl.
Yeah, and the,
it's
the other,
to feel sorry for her. I'm just saying.
And
the
also,
other big difference here is that that's a legal process that we have evidence of. Not only are they going to be executed because that's the legal system, but we have evidence that they actually said, yes, I would prefer this method of execution.
Well, I think it's clear that I'm not speaking in terms of the absolute reality of what happened. I'm discussing the story as we understand it, with all the caveats
right,
that go along with that.
Yes.
And what I'm saying is, because she said she, assuming, of course, that she said she wanted Sharia law at one point, changing her mind later, she gets zero sympathy from me. But I will say that it does enter it into more of a moral gray area where I find it more understandable to have sympathy mm-hmm. for her. But it's just not enough.
Well,
to
she
move
gets
me.
Tons of sympathy from me.
And
yeah,
another
she gets sympathy from me on all counts, actually.
Another problem with your analogy is that in that case, the end point in your analogy was the same. The person is dead. In this case, being under Sharia law and being under rational law, the end point would be very different.
Yeah. Under rational law, she's a rape victim who's not guilty of anything.
She gets medical treatment.
Yeah, she gets counseling and medical treatment. Yeah, that's Thad's dead right that the end point is very different. But anyway, what else have we got? Because we're closing in on overtime.
Final name on that story was Monsters. Yeah. Let's see. Another correction.
Gosh, we're so incorrect.
Yes. Kurt writes, I've enjoyed listening to both your nonprofit radio podcast and the Atheist Experience TV show. In the last NPR, you spoke about the Christian Children's Fund refusing a donation from Gen Con due to its D&D associations. I had the same reaction you all did, but recently read a different point of view on the whole situation. It seems there was some misunderstanding and a desire not to be associated with a company, Gen Con LLC, that was in Chapter 11 bankruptcy at the time and had some prior legal action related to charity contributions. Gen Con sued by Lucasfilm. And so there are extenuating circumstances.
Okay. That makes a lot more sense.
Yeah.
But I will say George Lucas is a litigious sack of shit.
Yes.
And I have read a few analysis of that defense mm-hmm. on a couple gaming sites, and there's still some open questions on that. I don't know the details.
Yeah.
I remember all that crap.
I know, but
I would say that there's enough there in terms of the financial status of Gen Con that I don't think it's a story that should be made a big deal of or pointed to because there's that level of indeterminacy.
Yes.
And there are plenty of situations where it's cut and dry, where they turn it down because they don't like the source of the money.
Right. Yeah. In an interview in the Escapist magazine with Sherry Dahl, Vice President of International Communications and Fundraising at CCF, offered this explanation. When Gen Con contacted CCF about its auction, we were pleased to accept donations. However, we couldn't lend our name for publication because our policies have specific criteria for endorsements. We were unaware that this had caused any problem or concern for Gen Con until we began receiving emails. This decision was in no way intended to be a reflection on Mr. Gygax, gaming enthusiasts, or the game Dungeons & Dragons, she continued. We have the utmost respect for the gaming community and were touched by the generosity expressed through your auction. We were disappointed that we were not the recipients of the donation, but we were pleased that another worthy organization benefited.
That's a pretty respectable reply.
Yeah.
Christian Children's Fund was Gary Gygax's favorite charity, Wikipedia says. In May 2004, CFF became the subject of some contention when Christian charity watchdog group Wall Watchers sent a donor alert informing them that the name of the charity was designed to intentionally mislead its donors into thinking it was a faith-based missionary group. Howard Leonard, a chief executive of Wall Watchers, was quoted by a magazine as saying, "It isn't Christian in the way we look at it. If you are going to be bringing help to these children, you should be bringing the gospel." A spokesperson for the group said that the organization does not proselytize any person to a faith. Rather, its name is derived from its founder, a Presbyterian minister who believed in Christian principles such as love thy neighbor as myself. This is CCF trying to distance itself from being cast as a Christian fundamentalist organization.
Well, they try to
proselytizes to the people it helps.
They try to make it more of a Christian's fund for children rather than a fund for Christian children.
Right.
But I still don't like the fuckers.
Yeah. One of the criteria. This is again from the spokesman of the Christian Children's Foundation. One of the criteria we take into consideration is whether the organization is financially sound. At the time we were contacted, Gen Con was filing for Chapter 11 bankruptcy. Before we could reach consensus, Gen Con moved forward in selecting another charity. Again, we did not realize how much the concerns this caused within the gaming community until we began hearing from so many of you. It was never intended as a slight. Okay, so this is enough.
They're in a position where
casted in a
I
light.
Believe them because if they had taken a principled stance against it, because Dungeons and Dragons, boogeyman, they wouldn't have issued that kind of statement. It'd be very unlikely.
Yeah. And the gaming community can be very defensive when it comes to this because Christians have attacked gamers
when
over and over.
They can be just idiotic in general.
Yeah.
It's not the most.
Well, there's no guarantee that being a gamer means you're rational.
Yeah.
Right.
Thank you, Kurt. Yeah. Okay. One other kind of story here. Vatican stalling on secret files that could prove wartime Pope ignored Holocaust.
Do we even need
that's
files?
That's in the well, duh. What do you?
Isn't that already documented?
Yeah, to a large extent. But I'm sure the Vatican has its own files, which are even more damning. Yeah, they should just invest in a shredding machine and not even pretend to be helpful.
You know, I don't want to say that the Vatican supported the Holocaust, but they definitely supported the people behind the Holocaust.
Oh, yeah.
And I don't know my history enough to know that they ever made any kind of withdrawal of support or changed and said, hey, look, they just killed a whole bunch of Jews.
It wasn't
so
that
we're
long
not
ago that John Paul went, he was supposed to go to Israel and make this big apology for the role that the Vatican didn't play in the Holocaust and changed his mind like 10 minutes before he made the fucking speech.
Yeah. I don't know that we need much. Who cares? I don't really care what's in the Vatican's secret vaults. I wish they'd spread some of that money around to people who need it rather than...
Well, I want to find out about all the lurid stuff. I mean, do they actually have Vatican assassins and stuff like that?
No, they just have street brawlers.
Street brawlers.
They got 80-year-old nuns who will kick you in the stomach when you're down.
Right.
Mercy. Wrap us up.
That's it. All right. Well, we're done. Hope you liked it, because that's all you're getting this time. Unless it's inconvenient, we'll be back in 2 weeks with another download to take up space on your iPod. Until then, this is Dennis Lube, Matt Dillahunty.
Bye-bye.
Thad Engling.
Goodbye.
And Chilling.
Yes.
Breathing a sigh of relief and waiting for Little Wing by Concrete Blonde to start and the mics to go dead. She's one.